Welcome and thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. And here we are at the Clock End Talk. This week we have Tony. How you going, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks yourself.
Yeah, not bad, mate, considering we're coming off the back of a loss, but we'll dive into that one in a second. Savvy, how are you, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. Not too good.
And this week we haven't got Carl with us, but we love to spread the love around, and we've got Schwinn with us from America. How are you, mate?
Not too bad. As Savvy said, I'm right there with him. Could have been better. Sunday morning, Arsenal didn't pick up 3 points, and we got some poverty games today. So, as Sundays go, that's what it is.
Sounds good, mate. Thanks for joining us, and let's get into it, guys. Tony, we're going to dive straight into the Arsenal-Watford game, mate. Now, before we get too much bogged down into the game, let's start with the lineup. What's your thoughts on the actual lineup, mate?
I said exactly this after Chelsea, that if you're going to play Welbeck and Iwobi behind a striker, we'll defend better from the front, but we will create absolutely nothing. So, I mean, I was in the pub walking to the ground when the team news came out, and we was all like straight away, like, we're going to struggle today because that team, there was not a creative player in the team. Like, and then you look even further back, you could maybe get away with them two behind a striker if say, a Jack is in there, because he's a bit creative. But then you look behind them and you've got Elneny, who doesn't create or do anything. Mm. And, I mean, to be honest, I've really felt sorry for Xhaka on the balance of the play, because every time he looked up, he had players that didn't want to know. Yeah. Every chance we had came through him, at least either directly, as in he was the assister of the chance, or he played a long ball that started the move, because there's no one picks up that 10 position with that lineup that wants to slide the ball through to Lacazette. I mean, he was starved of service. I can't think of one thing of note that he'd done, and I wouldn't say it's particularly his fault. Yeah, the team was just a joke. Like, that is a team that, if we played that team away to City, I wouldn't be as annoyed as I was playing it away to Watford, because you know you're going to have lots of the ball, but you're never going to create anything with them players.
Yeah, no, I was the same as you. I was disappointed with the lineup, and it was a lineup that I don't know if anybody would have predicted that was going to. Sanchez, Ozil on the bench, Iwobi in, Ramsey on the bench. What was your thoughts on it, Savvy?
Yeah, I agree with Tony. I think it was a very surprising lineup. There was no creativity at all, and I don't know on what merit Arsene Wenger picks Elneny over Wiltshire or even Ramsey or anyone, because I think he's just not good enough for the Premier League. He just passes it sideways and just roams around on the pitch. I think Welbeck, Iwobi, they worked hard, but they absolutely created nothing. And whatever chances we created for them, they missed it. And as Tony mentioned, Lacazette, I think he had no service at all. I don't remember he had a shot on goal, because I think we didn't give him a chance. And I think we should have started at least Jack Wiltshire or Ozil. And maybe if they are not fully fit, we could have taken them off. But it was a very, very bad lineup. And it was, as Tony said, it was not a lineup for Watford. It was a lineup for a big game where we have to work hard and we have to close players down. It wasn't a lineup to win the game. So it was surprising.
And obviously, you play some Wenger at fault. Ozil, Sanchez, you would have started both of them?
No, I wouldn't have. I think Alexis was not even on the bench. So I would have started Ozil or maybe Wiltshire. I would have started Wiltshire, because if Ramsey is not playing, then I'll switch to Jack Wiltshire, because he will give that creative spark to us. Mm-hmm. But not in a million years I'm starting Elneny over Jack Wiltshire.
Yeah, it was a very interesting one. And Schwinn, what was your thoughts on the lineup? And obviously Mertesacker, he come in at centre back due to Mustafi injury. But what was your take on it, mate?
Yeah, it was good to see Pearl back in the lineup and leading the boys out. I've always loved the guy. He's a loyal member of the Arsenal family and is going to continue working with the club even after the end of the season. So it's always good to see him and good to see him get a goal. I think hindsight is 20/20. So, you know, getting the result not the way we wanted, it's easy to, you know, talk about the lineup and maybe the faults in there. I'm going to offer a little controversial opinion in this case. I think the lineup wasn't bad. I'll be honest. I mean, in the run up to the game, I remember talking with you guys, and I was perhaps one of the few guys who was saying that maybe Watford is going to, you know, squeeze something out of this, and they did indeed. I think one of the biggest mistakes we probably made was, as you guys said, Elneny, because he just does not bring that spark in the midfield. And when we have our wingbacks running, especially Bellerin on the right, and when you have Elneny on the right part of our midfield is broken. Because you have Bellerin who might be up in the final third when an attack just broke down. And Elneny is usually all over the place. It's his asset and in some cases a liability. So I think hindsight is 20/20. So it's fair to say that the lineup, of course, did not get the result. And yes, we can talk about, you know, the Ozils on the bench and perhaps even Giroud on the bench. If you're going to take off Lacazette in the 67th minute with a 1-0 lead, you know, maybe start Giroud and have Lacazette and Giroud start, considering Welbeck just came back from injury. So then he hobbled off with a hamstring. So he's out again for the next, you know, 3 to 4 weeks. So I would have actually hoped for Giroud to start with Lacazette and maybe Iwobi in the hole, which was not the case.
Rewind 3 weeks. Well, let's rewind 4 weeks. Every Arsenal fan would have been happy to see Welbeck start. He went out with injury, and he's come back to start now alongside Iwobi. Elneny's type of... Look, let's face it, I don't think any of us here are a huge fan of Elneny. As we've said 100 times, he doesn't offer us a lot. But Welbeck, I don't have a problem with starting Welbeck there. Ozil, yeah, I agree. He was there on the bench, but I would have put Ozil in front of Iwobi. I think I did a starting lineup, and I thought Sanchez would have started, but then thinking about it later, with the international matches coming back from South America, wasn't it? I think he was. It was always going to be a risk, you know, fatigue and whatnot for him to start. Tony, what was your take on the actual match, mate?
I think the match was what the lineup suggested it would be. We had a lot of the ball. We didn't create anything. Like Wenger said in his interview after, we could have put and probably should have put the game to bed and gone 2-0 and 3-0 up, and it does end the game. But that's going on. We should have scored the three chances we had. Usually, when you say, "Oh, we had chances to make it 2-3," you don't mean we literally had three chances in the game, because we did. We had the goal. We had Iwobi's chance, which was a very good save, and we had Ozil's chance, which was a very poor finish, and. Possibly, I've only just seen it because I just watched the highlights now. Bellerin should have put it 2-0 in the first half. But it's not like we created chance after chance and should have gone 2-3-0 up. We literally, he's banking on us taking every chance. Football doesn't work like that. Otherwise, there'd be games that are 20-14 and stuff like that. It's just, I think that was a bit of a stupid statement. I can see where he's coming from. But yeah, so the performance was what it was. I think that Wenger made many tactical errors during the game. Watford came back into it and we didn't do anything about it. It was just a nothing performance. We done nothing. We had two holding midfield players but didn't manage to screen their strikers. We didn't pick up any second balls. And I know it's the most boring phrase in football, second ball. But, I mean, we show why it is a regular phrase, because we didn't win any of them and they won them all. Every time a ball bounced down, there was a Watford player on it. Yeah, I think it was a poverty performance. Looking at it's difficult to dig out individuals because no one was great. But again, I've said this before, and people, because he's our new exciting player that want to defend him all the time. Kolasinac was awful again, and Bellerin was worse, but Bellerin is always worse. So, I mean, yeah, it was just a horrible, horrible game.
Yeah, not a good one, especially a game that we should have won. I thought quite easily we should have got the 3 points. It was very disappointing that, and we'll touch on it later, Manchester United, Liverpool finished in the draw. Chelsea dropped 3 points. It was our chance to really grab these 3 points, and it would have put us up to fourth position, I think. You know, I don't want to be a negative Nancy like fucking Arsenal TV, but or Arsenal Fan TV, I should say. But at the end of the day, it was 3 points we should have won, Savvy, and should have got, mate. What was your take on the whole thing, mate?
Yeah, I think I agree with Tony. Even though we were having the possession, I think we dominated the ball. But we really didn't show the desire. I think Watford players showed more desire. And I think they were, as Tony said, they were winning all the second balls. And we were not even creating anything. And I think Welbeck and Iwobi, they started the game really well. They were working hard. They were running around, closing people down. But then I think it all went stale. And then after we got the goal, I think it was a good corner. It was a great header by Mertesacker. And I think we looked good afterwards. Up till halftime or maybe 50, 55 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then it was all Watford pressure. And I think in the end, if you look at the balance of the game, I think they probably deserved the point. Mm. If not 3 points, that penalty, I think it was a very bad decision by the ref. It was not at all a penalty. There was just a little touch, and he fell down.
I don't want to be biased or unbiased, but on my first opinion, looking at that penalty, it could have gone either way. Yes, I'm an Arsenal fan. Wasn't happy with the decision at the time, but I think a 50-50, it could have gone either way. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, you can say that it could have gone either way, but. It was a soft decision. So, in my opinion, it was a soft decision. And then, I think later on, I think our substitutions were negative. I think when Koscielny went injured, we should have switched to back four, maybe try to win the game or try to score a goal. Mm. And we didn't. Mm. I think in the end, Wenger was literally happy with the point. Mm. Because he put holding on. And then, I think Ozil... Ozil did well. He just came on and created a chance for Iwobi, which was a great save, but he missed a sitter. And defensively, we all know he's not going to give us much. But I think offensively, he did well when he came on. And it was not a very good performance by the team. And we can only blame ourselves for this bad result.
Mm-hmm. Schwinn, we, you know, it's 50. I'm just looking at the stats here, mate. So we got ball possession, 53% Arsenal. We had 9 shots in total. 6 of those shots were on target, 3 off target. Who do we blame for that?
I don't know. It was a tale of two halves, wasn't it? I think the first half we settled quickly. We didn't let the crowd get into the game, and we were passing the ball around, stringing a few passes, and you know, settling down just fine. And then that goal really helped. Mm. But as you know, Troy Deeney said, bollocks. You know, where's the cojones? We've talked time and time again about Arsenal closing games out. 1-0 to the Arsenal, as we all know, has been a standard flag bearer for our club. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to be that case anymore. And we really need to see those games out. We need to make sure that the first 45 minutes or whatever time we put in to get that lead is worth it. Because players lose all their steam as soon as they see the ball trickle back into the net. And can we just talk about if Petr Cech is ever going to save a penalty for Arsenal? Because I want to see that before I die.
I wish we could. Tony, you got anything to add on any of that, mate?
Just a few things. I kind of want to sum over a couple of things that you sort of said.
Yep.
The penalty, Never in a million years. I think you used to be implied by saying it's 50-50 or it's a soft decision. Mm. I'm not blaming the ref because we were awful and we got the result we deserved. But never in a million years is that a penalty. It won't happen because the FA have got no arsehole, but they're bringing 2-game retrospective ban for diving. He won't get one, but that is why the law was brought in. Another thing, I don't think we're going to cover it later on, so I'll just go over it now. Obviously, Troy Deeney said, like, come out and said, we've got no bollocks, we've got no balls. Whilst he's right, I can't believe people are applauding that statement. Next time we beat someone, I want Wenger to come out and say, oh, we beat them because they're shit at football and we're a lot better. Mm. And people would go, oh, that's a bit harsh, you can't say that.
You can't say but that, yeah.
But Deeney says it, and apparently he's some form of maverick. Mm. Like, I don't understand where... Yeah, look, yes, he's right, but... When the teams come out and say stuff like that, like, it's just, I can't believe he's being applauded for that. Not just by Arsenal fans, but by the media in general. Oh, he's right. You can't blame Troy Deeney. He said nothing wrong. Okay, next time we beat someone and they don't get much of the ball, we beat them because they're shit and they can't play football. Come out and say that and see how well that statement goes.
Yeah, it's, I agree totally with you. And had I'll rephrase this. So the fans have come out. That Watford, we've lost the game against Watford, and the Arsenal hater fans, the Arsenal Wenger fans, they've all come out. They want him out again. On the back of this one loss, is it on the back of the comments made by Deeney?
For me, it's nothing to do with the Deeney comments. I mean, obviously, I was there, and there was anti Wenger chanting at the game. I don't know. I mean, someone mentioned about going, should have gone to four at the back when Koscielny went off injured. I don't know what they showed on TV, but just before that, Jack was meant to come on for Iwobi, and they cancelled the sub because Koscielny went down. But it wasn't working with a back five or back three, whatever you want to call it. So even with the Koscielny injury, he should have changed it. Savvy's right. He should have changed it to a four because... With a five, we was only going to concede. We wasn't getting out. Mm. They wasn't giving us any space because they had the extra body in midfield. So I think that's another tactical decision. And it's also a PR disaster with everyone wanting Wilshere on the pitch and him literally being on the touchline waiting to come on. And then Wenger changing his mind. So I think that has caused a lot of hate. It did in the ground anyway. As soon as like Wilshere stepped back from the touchline and sat back down, it was still 1-0 at that point, and the fans were going wild because we were singing Wilshere's name the whole game. Like, even in like the first minute, you wouldn't believe that. Like, I don't like chanting players' names that aren't on the pitch.
Yep.
But it was literally the loudest chants all day were all surrounding Jack Wilshere.
They wanted him on the field.
Yeah.
Okay. Savvy, you, I think you said earlier Jack should have started. A lot of fans are saying he should have either come on or started. Would it be a game you'd start him, though?
Yeah, I think I wouldn't have started if Ramsey is available. But when you see we are not starting Ramsey, Ozil is not fully fit, then obviously I'll start Jack Wilshere because he was not out on international duty. Mm-hmm. He was building his fitness at the club. So, obviously, he can obviously start and get 60 or 70 minutes. Then we can sub him off. So, and starting Elneny, who travelled to Egypt and then came back. So, I think that was a bad decision.
Yeah, I couldn't. He must love him. I got no answer on why you'd continue. Why you'd start Elneny? I got nothing. It's a complete mystery. You shed some light on it, Tony. You got any ideas?
I got nothing.
I don't know. Like, to be fair, I think, like, obviously Ramsey and Sanchez, the reason that it was cited that they didn't play is because they were low on confidence after not qualifying for the World Cup. Mm. So the only thing I can possibly imagine, which is nonsense, but is that Iwobi and Elneny have both qualified for the World Cup, so their confidence and morale will be highest. The only reason I can think he started them, but... They're both, one's travelled to where, I don't know if Nigeria are at home, but either way, Iwobi's travelled to Africa to play. And then he's played both games for Egypt. And one of them, I mean, obviously everyone's seen Salah scoring a 94th minute penalty, and he played the whole game. And I think that was on Monday. So he's played 94 minutes on like 5 days before. And then both of them completed 90 minutes. And it seems mad when you've got a guy that's not been on international duty, is going to be as fresh as anything. And he's not even got a minute. Like, it's just, it literally makes no sense. But as I said, the only excuse I can possibly give, which I don't agree with, is that if Sanchez and Ramsey were low on confidence from going out, he maybe thought that Iwobi and Elneny would be flying because they've got through. But to be honest, I don't think it carries much resemblance. You can tell there's a difference. It's like if you go and play on a Monday, if I go and play football on a Monday with one team and we win, and I go and play on Tuesday for another team that are completely different players, and I'm the only one, I don't know any of the other players, it doesn't carry over. I don't think, oh, my team won yesterday, so my team's going to win today. And I think the same with that. Iwobi will look to his side with Arsenal and see Lacazette in front of him. When he's playing for Nigeria, I don't know who's playing in front of him, but you know there's a difference. You have to play differently. So I don't think it carries much weight.
What's your thoughts on it, Schwinn?
Well, I have a question. Do you guys think if Wilshere would have started, do you think he would have started behind the striker? Or do you think he would have started in midfield alongside Xhaka?
Wilshere would have probably put him behind in the midfield.
I would have put him alongside Xhaka and Elneny on the bench.
I agree.
Yeah, see,
that way to get creativity from deep.
See, that's what I would presume. But whatever we've seen of Wilshere so far has been right behind the striker in this 3-4-3 system. And I think that's one of the reasons he wasn't started. We can, of course, debate whether that's, a feasible reason. But I think maybe Wilshere hasn't had enough time to really get used to Lacazette. Of course, they've been training together. And they play against each other and sometimes on the same team when they're playing in training. But maybe they haven't had any sort of time to get used to each other in a competitive setting, and maybe that's the reason Wilshere wasn't started. Again, I'm speculating here.
It was only Barthez where he played behind the striker. Doncaster in midfield, and when he came on against Cologne, he played in a deeper role. So I don't carry much. What you're saying about the link up is right, but you're saying he's only played in that position. Yes, he played his 90 against Barthez there, but he played his 70 odd against Doncaster, where he was excellent as a deeper midfielder. With Elneny, and when he came on against Cologne and was very good for 15 minutes, again, he was a deeper player in midfield. So I don't really agree with what you're saying. Although the premise is correct, it's not that he hasn't played there, because he has played there.
Fair enough.
Yeah, look, it's the whole thing's interesting. Okay, where do we go next week? Tony, what lessons have we learnt as he learnt this week? And we are talking Wenger, so.
He doesn't learn lessons. As I said, I'm never one that calls for his head. I don't think he should be there. I don't want him to be Arsenal manager, but I'm not going to hound him out. But I think we're naive if we think he's going to learn from it, because he's been doing the same stuff for years and years and years. The thing is, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes with Elneny it depends on obviously Ramsey, but I wouldn't be surprised if he goes with Elneny and Xhaka again against Everton, because he thinks, I know they're not playing well, but he thinks they're quite a big team. It is a tough game going there traditionally, so I wouldn't be surprised if he goes for a shut up shop option unless Ramsey's fit. But where we change from here, there's a whole heap of changes we could make, but whether he's going to do them is, I'd be very surprised. I think Thursday, obviously, we're away to Red Star. I think that'll tell us a lot, because if Elneny doesn't travel, Elneny's been firmly part of the Europa League squad, which is very different from the first team. And if Elneny doesn't travel this week, it gives you some clues into what Wenger's thinking for Sunday.
Now, I was just scrolling through our Twitter because I was having a look. Somebody did ask a question. I apologise, I haven't got who it was. We are going to go through a few questions later, but since we're talking about it, the question was, what is Wenger's fascination with Iwobi? Savvy?
Yeah, I really don't know. But I think it wasn't that surprising decision to start Iwobi. I think more surprising one was Elneny. And we all saw Iwobi did well at Chelsea. So I think he kind of deserved this start. So you can't really say he's personalizing towards Iwobi.
Mm.
I think he deserved a start because of his good performances. Lately, he has been good and he scored a goal before international breaks. So, I think he deserved the start.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Schwinn? You reckon he deserved the start?
I think he did. I think Tony made a very valid point that Elneny and Iwobi were probably chosen because, you know, the morale for them was high. They had just come off international duty securing qualification. So that could have been the case. I also do think that Iwobi was actually the one who was breaking lines yesterday. Xhaka could not find his range, and Elneny was very horizontal. It was one side or the other. And Iwobi, I think, was bringing in a little extra, some injection of pace, a little bit of creativity, some one-twos near the box. So he did bring something in. Of course, the chance that was carved out for him by Ozil wasn't converted, which in hindsight, it really did cost us. But I think he had a good game. Would I pick him in my starting 11 away at Watford, which is a good team, quite so? I don't know. I don't think I would. But considering the performance...
Yeah, and a lot of, just on what you're saying there, mate, like, a lot of people forget Watford, they're no mugs. They're not a tough... You know, they're a tough team at home, and they're sitting fourth up in the ladder. They've won four out of their four for, you know... Because they're not a bad team.
Yeah. Not at all. I think their defensive midfielders are very good. I think Doucouré brings some promise to that defensive side. I think Cleverley wasn't bad at all yesterday, which is something I did not imagine myself saying ever. But I think Kolasinac not finding his stride. I think he's lost a little bit of confidence maybe in the last couple of weeks. Maybe he was still feeling that knock that he picked up on international duty, but I was watching the City game that they played against Watford at Vicarage, and City was bombarding the left side. They overloaded the left side and were focused on going down their left side. And we did not make the most of that. We tried to go play through the middle where we were short a man, and we did not take advantage of the flanks. And I think that's where we sort of lost to that really energy-filled Watford midfield.
I just want to... No one actually answered the question about what Wenger's obsession is with Iwobi. Just so that user doesn't think we're politicians, that avoids all questions. He's very... I remember, as I think I've mentioned this on here before, I might have said it to someone else, that when he broke through, I saw an interview with who was his youth team manager, and they said he was never the best player in the youth team, but two things he was very good at is he's very good at pressing, and we've all seen that, and he's very press resistant. He doesn't often lose the ball, which again is correct. So they're his strengths, and that's what Wenger sees in it. My problem is they're not aspects you want in your attacking midfielder. The pressing, yes, but the keeping hold of the ball, I don't care if he keeps hold of the ball. I'd rather him lose the ball but try and create chances. Like Ozil, when he's trying to thread them through balls, you don't mind if he overhits a few, underhits a few.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to create something. Iwobi, he doesn't ever actually try and create anything. He must have the best pass completion stats for an attacking midfielder or an offensive player in the league, probably, because all his passes are safe. I'd much rather see him take a few more risks and try and create anything. So what Wenger sees as his strength are fair enough, and that's why he plays in the big games. He's a bit like Park Ji-sung was at Man United, because his pressing is so good and his possession retention is so good. He plays in them games because against the big teams you need to press and you need to not lose the ball, and he's very good at that. But because he doesn't create anything, it's definitely why I wouldn't start him against I don't want to call Watford a smaller team, but let's face it, they're not a top six team.
Yeah, they're not a top six, but then, like I was saying to Schwinn earlier, they're no mugs.
No, they're a decent side, but I think Iwobi is a player that you start potentially against a top six away if you think you're gonna struggle and you need to press and keep the ball. and you need to keep it tight for 60 to 70 minutes, I think Iwobi is that type of player. He's not the type of player you play where you're going to have lots of the ball, because he has lots of the ball, but he doesn't use it to any real effect.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to I'll run through a couple of someone's put a ratings out of the players. Now, we haven't done it yet. I'm not sure whether Savvy was going to get onto that later down the track during the week. But
yeah, I'll do that.
That's all right, mate. But I just it was very interesting because Shaq has copped a fair bit of slack amongst fans. They're saying, and we all know that I'm a Shaka fan, but in the rating, he got a 7.7. In the rating. Now, he was second of best behind Mertesacker in the Arsenal team. Do you agree with that, or do you disagree? And we'll go around the table, Tony.
From being at the game, I genuinely thought he was our best player, and most of the people did. It wasn't his fault that he had nothing around him. Obviously, he lost cleverly for the goal, and it is unforgivable, but... Ball. I'm not making excuses for him, but so that's a big mistake. And the reason that gets noticed is because obviously it's the winning goal. That happens in the first minute, and then he has the game he did. You go on to forget about it. But every attack started from him, because the two players ahead of him in Welbeck and Iwobi aren't creators by any stretch of the imagination. Everything came through him, whether it was him playing it long and someone, as I mentioned earlier, and someone spinning wide, or him directly creating the chance by spinning long, or him playing one of them sort of 60-yard crossfield balls that gets the ball wide to a player in space. Literally everything was coming through him. And he's not there to be our creator, but he was having to do that job because no one else picked up the pieces to do it. So I think he's another one. It was Giroud last year, and we've had players before. It's been Ramsey before, where it's fashionable to criticise them.
Yep.
And I really feel that Xhaka's that player at the moment. Like, again, every time he does give the ball away, you get people say, "Oh, I thought this lad was supposed to be able to pass." And you think, what are you on about? If someone makes 99 passes and gives away one, that doesn't make him a bad passer of the ball. And yesterday he did give the ball away on a few of the long passes more than he usually does. But that's because he was having to play them more than he usually does, because he had no one creative ahead of him. And he didn't even have a Ramsey alongside him who's semi-creative. He literally had to do it all himself. So he was trying to play 50, 60-yard balls that weren't on. And of course he's going to give some of them away, because he shouldn't be playing them, but he had no other option. I've seen a lot of people criticising him, and literally, I honestly, Mertesacker's Mertesacker. You know what you're going to get. He's steady. I don't think he'd done as well as against Deeney as I would have liked, which is why I would give it to, I would say, Xhaka was our best player over Mertesacker. Yeah. They are our two best, but Xhaka's the one on social media. If you didn't watch the game,
he's copping it.
It looks like he's our worst player.
Yeah, and you mentioned you're not sure why people are slowing him, and I just my opinion on that is, I think he was what, £35 million.
Yeah,
and then you look at I think that price tag, and then you have a look at Manchester City with De Bruyne. Now, I don't want to compare the two players, but then you look at what they paid for him to what he's offering Manchester City to what Shaka's offering us. And I'm a Shaka fan, but I just think people are looking at his price tag and thinking, this guy's a bloody busted ass. So.
Well, I mean, De Bruyne's a poor comparison. They play in different positions. De Bruyne was £17 million more in a transfer window before, and the prices went crazy in that time. So De Bruyne in the next transfer window would have probably been £70 million. But as I said, Jack, the thing is, you're comparing him to De Bruyne, who's there. His sole job is to create. That's all he has to do, in theory.
I wasn't comparing them as both players. They're both type of the engine of both teams, really. Like, most of attack comes from City, is out of De Bruyne. And like you say, Shaka's, he's type of our engine in the back there, so... In the mids,
I say it every time he's made to play with Elneny, that he's being hung out to dry, because he's got someone next to him that offers nothing. He runs around a lot, but then when he gets the ball, he plays it 5 yards. So it's a waste of time giving it to him or finding his runs. And then he also, as I said, he couldn't even play the ball, slide the ball into midfield, 5-10 yards ahead of him, because neither of them wanted to create anything. Iwobi and Welbeck, or couldn't, not wanted to. Mm-hmm. I think not comparing the two because there is a whole different level between the two, but if Cazorla would have played yesterday, I think he would have been stuck in the same position where he usually slides the ball through to midfield. He could do it, but it's a waste of time because then players don't do anything. So I don't think Cazorla, who is an unbelievable player, for me our most important, would have been able to do much more yesterday. So as I said, I think it's just a very lazy criticism of Xhaka, and he's just the one at the moment that gets criticised. We always have a player that, as I said, it was Giroud last year, it's been Ramsey before, it's been Mertesacker before, that every time anything goes wrong, it's their fault, regardless of if it was their fault or not.
Schwinn, on Xhaka, mate, what's 7.7, Mertesacker 8.3, you see them as our two best?
I mean, relatively, yes. I wouldn't disagree with 8.3, 7.7s. I don't really regard ratings in any manner. I do think we expect a lot of Xhaka, as we should. He's shown his capabilities in the Bundesliga. He's got a little bit of a hot head, but I feel like he's got that under control since the beginning of this season, which was something I was expecting from him. He didn't have the greatest game. He was by far one of our better players. But, I mean, that same result, if we had won 2-1, we wouldn't be talking about all of this. So I think that puts things into perspective. And as Tony very, very astutely mentioned, that if that happened in the first minute, we wouldn't be talking about this either. So I do think that he lost his, you know, his thought at the very end and just let cleverly slip, which was an unfortunate ping pong going on in the box. But I don't have any problems with Granit. I think he's got a good future ahead of him. I think he's just being scapegoated, and I think he'll bounce back. He'll be fine.
Okay. Savvy, I'm going to throw another one to you, mate. Monreal, he's been outstanding this season, but he's also copped a little bit of criticism, nowhere near as much as Xhaka. But what was your thoughts on Monreal's game?
The usual game. He's right. Always, yep. I think, 8 out of 10. And he was 8 out of 10. And we can't say there was a mistake by Nacho Monreal. And I think he did what he usually does. And you really can't blame him. He was he defended well. And whenever he was needed, he was there. I don't blame him. I think he had a good game. And if other players around him played better, we wouldn't even be talking about him like we are saying about Xhaka.
Well, I think the criticisms probably come down from the left through Kolasinac through to Monreal.
So yeah. I think he was not supporting him well because I think Kolasinac was looking tired and he wasn't tracking back his runners. I think Nacho Monreal, I think 2-3 times in the game, he covered Kolasinac's runners because Kolasinac couldn't come back to track his runners. So obviously, that shows that you are going out of position and people can criticize you. But that's purely because Kolasinac was not tracking his runners. So he had to go out of position to track them.
Okay. Tony, Lacazette, where's he at and what's... He's also copped a bit of criticism. He's not scoring like, let's say, Morata and a couple of the other gun strikers. So he's getting a bit of slack as well. So what's going on in your mind with Lacazette?
Personally, this isn't a I told you so, but I said it before we signed him. I said it after we signed him. He doesn't offer enough. Look, yesterday it wasn't... I think he's one of them players, you don't have to put it on a plate for him, but... you have to provide for him. It's a personal thing. I don't like that type of player. I never have done. It's why I've never rated Jermaine Defoe, Chicharito at West Ham, Javier Hernandez. I've never really liked him. I just don't like that type of player because it's almost like you've got 10 players unless the ball is in the opposition's area. He's a bit better than that. He links up quite well, but I just feel like he doesn't have an impact on games unless he's scoring, which isn't a bad thing, but unless you score every week, you're not involved. He's not a bad player and he's a very good finisher. I want him to get involved more. I want him to run the channels to stop. Like, so yesterday, he stood in the middle of the pitch pretty much and every time Jack had the ball, he looked up and he had to try and go long to Welbeck because Welbeck is obviously very quick. But
yeah,
if Lacazette does that job, then Welbeck can stay a bit shorter, and now we have two options instead of just one, because you've got Welbeck short or Lacazette in the channel.
Yeah.
I just don't like, it's like, Giroud's obviously not mobile and he's not the best player, but it gives you options. You can play to his feet and his link-up's unbelievable. He's 6'4" and very good in the air. There's just more options there. So my problem with Lacazette is the problem I sort of knew he would have before we signed him. And again, I'm not trying to say I knew this because it was a welcome addition, but I think we're seeing what we knew we would see, really. When he's had chances, he's scored them. Apart from that, he doesn't contribute too much to general play.
Yeah, well, just when on the Giroud thing, and you mentioned it, when over here in the commentary they were talking, when the Giroud come on, Lacazette went off, it was on a set piece, and I could actually see what was happening, because on a set piece, Giroud's going to offer you a goal, where Lacazette, he's the fox in the boxes, so to speak, but he's not that Giroud style player, is he?
But the same thing kind of applies, because I think Giroud actually did win the header to clear the corner that they had, but a lot of people are saying, oh, why didn't they play them two together? And there obviously is an argument for that. But on the sixth, I think it was, you just said 67th minute or something like that, Lacazette done nothing to deserve to stay on that pitch.
Yeah.
So saying, oh, why don't you keep him on and play them both together? Because Lacazette had done absolutely nothing. We always moan for the players that are playing bad or not involved in the game to come off. But yesterday when he didn't do that, and I'm not defending Arsene Wenger because I think he had a horrific game yesterday in terms of his management, but I didn't see much wrong with taking off Lacazette because he literally was anonymous.
Mm-hmm. He offered nothing. Okay. All right, well, that's about it for the Watford-Arsenal game. I think we could... I don't know if we could... It was a disappointing game. As we've said, 3 points. Savvy, a few of us have agreed. Wilshere. I'm just going through. There's lots of questions, so... We've touched on pretty much most of your questions through that conversation of Arsenal-Watford. So we'll move on to... it was interesting. I was listening to a couple of commentators over here. They were doing a little after the match show. There was an interesting question that came up. Has Wenger, in your memory, has he ever lost the dressing room? And let's go with Schwinn.
That's a tough one. Of course, we hear reports all the time about infighting and, fighting within the staff, maybe disagreement and this and that. I don't think Wenger has lost the dressing room right now, if that's what we're talking about.
I think that's what they're implying, yeah.
Okay. I think the Alexis Ozil situation is, of course, something which is hanging over our head. And a big, big distraction. If that's what you want to call losing the dressing room, then yes, I think that's valid. But I do think that the players, majority of the players, still believe in Wenger and still believe that he can lead the team. But yes, I mean, it's toxic, isn't it? Especially with the Wenger out brigade and with results like this. I mean, even a fan like me who would say that I'm on the fence when it comes to Wenger in or Wenger out, because I'm not close enough to make, an informed decision. These games hurt because we all tune in just to see us win. We don't care about everything else as long as we get the 3 points. And so, yes, I mean, I could see an argument being made, but I cannot make an informed decision based on what I know.
Savvy, what's your take on it, Mark?
Yeah, I think Wenger, even if he has lost the dressing room, it's never going to come out. And right now, I don't think he has lost it. And I think most of the players who are unsettled at the club are mainly here because of Arsene Wenger, whether you say Mesut Ozil or Alexis Sanchez. When they signed, they clearly pointed out that Arsene Wenger was the one who convinced them to come to Arsenal. So I don't think, and everybody knows he's a respected guy. Everybody respects him. You can slate him as much as you want, but everybody knows he's quality. But definitely these reports will come out because he wasn't at his best yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
When that good and his team selection didn't work out. So that's why maybe they are saying this. But otherwise, I think he hasn't lost it.
A lot of fans, Tony, they don't really know the... and I'm not sure the age of you guys either, but they don't know anything else but Arsene Wenger.
Yes. One of the guy I go to every game with, pretty much, or two of them, one's 21 and the other one's 26. And so they've only really known Wenger, but they're both sort of educated, not educated enough, that's the wrong word. They're both sensible enough to know that, like, he has given us a sense of entitlement. Like, the year before he came here, we was, like, I don't even know where we came, but we was nowhere. So all these expectations that people are criticising him for came about because of his work.
Yeah.
So, look, as I said, I'm not defending him because I don't think he should be Arsenal manager. Mm. But, yeah, I think he is suffering from his own success in some way.
Mm. He built a castle and he built Arsenal pretty much. And, you know, he's won a lot of trophies along the way. And, yeah, you could argue that he's had a few quiet years and football around has changed and football in general has changed. You know, they say.
I mean, I wouldn't say he built Arsenal. I wouldn't say he built Arsenal. That's a very, very.
Not built Arsenal, but he changed football, didn't he?
I agree with that. I just don't want people coming that know about obviously 89, 89, and everything before that, all of the doubles before that, and the league to say, oh, you've only known Arsenal since 1997.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously 96. Sorry. It's not the case, but he built this team and the team before him, from following on from George Graham, who had a bit of a disastrous end. I mean, anyone that remembers Bruce Rioch if you're comparing this season or last season to Bruce Rioch seasons, believe me, we're in a better place now than we was ever going to be then. And Danny Bergkamp was in that side, so it's not like Bruce Rioch was playing with a load of crap players. He had Bergkamp, Wright, Merson. The old back four or back five everyone speaks of. So, I mean, it's another thing when people say, oh, Wenger inherited a good team. Okay, he may have done, but that good team finished 10th or 13th or something stupid. So, it's there was Arsenal before him, but as I said, he's created a sense of entitlement amongst young fans that have never known anything other than Wenger. And as I said, if you're 21, by the time you was 5 or 6, we was invincible, which is about the time you'd probably start paying a proper interest in football. It's 5 or 6 years old. Mm. So you've seen the Invincibles and then you probably think that's normal, but it's not.
Yeah, no, that's and thanks for pulling me up there because, yeah, I don't want to harm a couple of the older listeners are thinking, hang on. So look, I'm a little bit on the fence as well as Schwinn said. I'm not close enough to actually know what goes on over in London, and so I only see what we see on the TV. So I am a little bit on the fence. I've loved watching, you know, Wenger since '96, and prior to that, well, yeah, it was okay, but he's come in and, you know, changed what it is, and he set that mindset of. You know, we are a top four team, I suppose, and we want that. This year was very hard, no Champions League and Europa League and everything. But should he be replaced? And the only thing I can comment on that is, if you find me a better man that can replace him, then replace him. And yes, there's plenty of better men out there, but are they willing to take an Arsenal job? So I don't want some, and no disrespect to Eddie Howe, but I don't think he's the guy to be taking over. So,
can I just say, after hearing what Tony just said, just a quick observation. I think one of the places where Wenger is sort of facing some friction is the things he introduced. We all know that he sort of revolutionized English football. Nutrition, stats, you know, the list goes on and on.
Mm.
And I think in today's world, football needs to evolve. We've seen the way Manchester City have built this platform. we've seen the way they handle negotiations. You know, they have these team of lawyers that goes to places. They'll hunt down agents. They'll hunt down different sorts of parties and get the job done. Yeah. Pep Guardiola might not be directly involved in everything, but he's got the people in the place to do that.
To do it now, for him, yeah.
And we don't even have a chief negotiator at this point. I mean, Dick Law doesn't have a job, you know? So I think the old dinosaur is sort of now looking at this guy, and we need to really learn. I mean, there's no harm in learning from success, right? So if we can sort of not emulate, not replicate, but emulate that sort of idea where Wenger is a little more hands-off, because I know he loves the club and he wants to be a part of every breathing moment of it. But I think it would serve as an asset just to sort of step back and maybe focus more on the football and have people in charge to run the show off the pitch.
Yeah, earlier in the week, and I'll Tony might be a little bit more involved in this. I will ask you, Tony, director of football. There were some rumours floating around.
Yeah, it was a strange one because it seemed to be like officially announced was the way it was coming across. That's what it looked like.
Yeah.
And then obviously Wenger's denied it, so it is a bit of a strange one. I would expect it to happen because it's the way modern football is. I think every team has, whether they're labelled or is publicised, they have someone in that role. How much of a back seat they take is different at every club. But I think pretty much every modern team uses that system of a director of football or a sporting director, or they call it different things in different
whatever
places.
It's called, yeah.
Yeah, someone in that role. So I'd be very surprised if we don't go down that route. We may. I thought what I said when it was, I thought the news was officially broken, was I thought that Overmars would come in the summer, and he would have his year of transition while Wenger was having obviously his last year as manager. And then when a new manager comes in, they've got someone that's already in the job and knows what they're doing, rather than having two new people both trying to cut their teeth at the same time, so to speak. I would still expect it to happen in that way. It could have been a case that they've gone to a point, him and Wenger's put his foot down and said, I won't work under that system. I don't know. I'm speculating and I could be completely wrong. But it is a strange one because it did look as like it was coming from sort of all official channels. As I said, Arsenal.com never said it, but they're always the last on anything anyway. But yeah, it is a bit of a strange one. But I do think the club will go down that route. I've been saying it a while. It was actually the day before the Overmars leak came out. Someone had DM'd me, and we was talking about us. And I said to them, I can't find the person's name, but I said to them, Arsenal were looking at an ex-player to take that role. And then the next day, obviously, the Overmars stuff came out. So I do think we'll go down that route. But yes, it's a bit of a strange situation.
Yeah, well, I was talking to, when you're talking about DMs, actually, and people know him through the Twitter, the football mole, so I'll mention it, but he actually mentioned to me, and I'll go through the DM that he actually said to me, basically, although he wouldn't be surprised because Gazidis, he wants a director of football, it won't be until next summer if it does happen. But he's sure a director of football will come in. Overmars is likely considered with his experience. And then a type of news broke around that on the Tuesday that an agreement reached, like you said, Tony. And I said, is this true? And he said, not confirmed fully yet. Likely source said yesterday, it's more than likely director of football will come in. So a lot of speculation on a director of football. Who was your DM from?
Someone asked me what's going on, and it wasn't anyone. It was just a follower. I think one of you two spoke to him last night after the game, but he was just talking about it because he messaged me as soon as the news broke, and he said it's funny that you'd said that yesterday. Yeah. And I said it's been the plan for a while. I mean, Gazidis obviously he wanted to change Wenger in the summer. It's well known that he wanted to get rid of Wenger, bring in a new manager, and bring in a director of football. At that time, Robert Pires was largely touted for the role. I mean, a lot of it was self-promotion. He kept saying he wanted the role, which obviously at the time didn't exist. So I knew that Arsenal were looking at well, Gazidis was looking at ex players for that role. But I mean, it wasn't a DM. It wasn't like Gazidis or DM me and said.
What's your take on it all, Savvy? Director of football, you want one in?
Yeah, I want one. I really want one. And I think there should be some authority at Arsenal Football Club.
Some what?
Which is some authority. At present is only Arsene Wenger, because I think, as we have talked about earlier, most of the board members are not really football people. So we really need someone who can say, Wenger, that it should be done this way, not your way, which is not there at the club right now. And I really want that. And I would loved Overmars, because I think he's experienced. And I think he was a great player for us. And I really like him. I really liked him as a player. And we clearly need one. But as I think Schwinn, he said we should be working more like City. I think we can't work like Manchester City, because we don't have Arab money with us. And definitely they have loads of money. They can throw whatever the negotiator, whatever the player's agent ask, and they can throw that and get the player. We don't have that luxury. So I think we should be going on Manchester United's route. That is, I think, more feasible for us, because we are a club who doesn't take money from the owners. So definitely, but we should be more decisive, and director of football will help us do that. So one should be there.
Yeah, look, and as Schwinn touched earlier, that, you know, this is probably what we need, mate, is a director of football to come in and help Wenger. Like,
yeah.
You know, you only have to look at this bloody... We haven't a chief negotiator, and we got Kroenke's young bloke bloody handling negotiations with Ozil, haven't we? So it just tells you how much... Yeah, it tells you how much bloody crisis this bloody club's in, and what Wenger's got his hands on everything. So, and nothing, you know, not taken away. He's a great man, but... There's only so much you can do. So, hopefully, Schwinn, we get something, mate.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's move on. There's plenty of questions, and thank you very much. You can follow us at clockend_talk on Twitter, and you can find our blog at clockend.blog, and the boys are doing a great job throwing out articles, and we're just fans pumping out this podcast as well, and, you know, try and interact with as many of you as we can. So, give us a shout out. Give us some questions. Now, just going through, Glenn Baxter says, was it just me? Did the Watford game illustrate just how important Ramsey is for our team? Tony?
I think there's a case that some players become more valuable when they're not playing than they are when they're playing. I think England have got that with Jack Wilshere at the moment, and obviously because of, like, if we win 3-0 yesterday, no one says, oh, we need to bring Ramsey back into that team. We do need to bring Ramsey back into that team regardless of yesterday's result. But I think when you lose, it's just very easy to say, oh, we need him back, we need X, Y and Z back. So yes, we do need him back in the team, but I don't think yesterday showed that. I think yesterday showed we just weren't very good as a whole. It wasn't like everyone was good, and Elneny, who's obviously playing in place of Ramsey, was awful. It was, as a whole, we weren't good enough. So I don't want to pinpoint it on one person. We do need Ramsey back, but I don't think yesterday showed.
Mm-hmm. And I just found that earlier question about Iwobi, and that come from Neil. Thank you, Neil. So we did touch on that earlier in the podcast, right? Okay, Savvy.
Yeah.
Well, we touched on why Wenger didn't play Wilshere. Man like Dan, he's a happy camper, this guy. Hey? I don't blame you, Dan. We could have Ronaldo and Messi in the team. I just don't see us going anywhere while Wenger remains. It's a big call.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's not the case because, first of all, we are never getting Ronaldo and Messi. And then I think we can do good under Wenger. But definitely yesterday was not the day where we could say that because he clearly wasn't at his best and his decision didn't work out. And actually, I think there's a second point to the story, second view. I think if we had won the game, we wouldn't be talking about his decisions because I think then if I think Ozil, Iwobi or Bellerin finish that chance, then we win the game. And then nobody's talking about all this stuff. So I think it's down to that. And I think there are many, many, many fans who are calling for Wenger to step down and all. But we have to accept it that he'll be here till I'm no Wenger out or Wenger in guy. And I definitely want a new manager. But we have to accept it that he will be here for next 2 years. So all we can do is just support him. It will be of no use to criticize him for after every match and asking him to step down and that. It would be of no use.
And
it will just bring some...
Yeah, I agree with you, Savvy, but I will also defend Dan as well. It is out of frustration. Had we have won the game, we'd be having a different conversation now. But look, Dan's a fan like all of us, and he's venting frustration, and he's like, oh, yeah. So I appreciate it, and anyway, Dan, thank you. I feel like I'm holding back sometimes, don't I? Okay. Schwinn, mate, I've got one here from Vish, and it's an interesting question, actually. Wenger should step down, take over the director of football position, bring in either Simone or Lucas Enrique or Tuchel.
That would be great, wouldn't it? We live in a fat.
let's break the question down. Let's go. Would you be happy with Wenger as a director of football?
Indeed. Will he?
No, probably
because
not.
he the man breathes football. I mean, you hear all his interviews. You hear any former player talking about him. That's all he does. A win sets his week in motion. A loss is a burden on him. Every loss, as he once said, is a burden on me. He's not gonna stand for that. And I feel some other club is gonna come knocking at the door if they think that Arsene Wenger is no longer in charge of football of the playing football. I don't think that's gonna happen, and I don't think Wenger wants to do that even the slightest.
And I'll just mention, I do not want Luis Enrique anywhere near Arsenal.
Now, and same for Tuchel.
He did a good job at Barcelona, but I think I've said it to you guys. Any of us could have managed that team. Have a look at the team you got. Okay, so guys, we've been going for nearly an hour. So I want to touch on what games did you watch? Let's go around the grounds. So what did you watch, Tony? You see any other games this week, mate?
I watched the bore fest that was Man United versus Liverpool, or Liverpool versus Man United.
Jose got the bus out again.
Just touching on that, Mourinho's always had a model of win at home, draw against the big sides away, and it will usually win you the league. I don't think that will happen this season because I think City will just be too strong and won't drop points anywhere else, really.
Yeah.
Apart from that, I've seen the highlights of all of yesterday's games. Obviously, Everton-Brighton is on now. It was 0-0 last I checked, but I'm not watching it. The game, I don't know if you guys noticed, the game was moved for Indian TV. It's not being shown in England. So I have no way of watching it. It's 1-0. I've just checked. 1-0 now. Apart from that, I've seen the highlights. It finished 1-0. Rooney scored a late equaliser.
I thought it was even on a weird time over here, and I thought, that's odd, because usually when I'm doing a podcast, I can throw a game on in the background, but there was no games to go. It was 1:50 a.m. or something here, I think it is.
Yeah, it's been moved for Indian TV, which is a bit strange, but Rooney scored a 90th minute penalty. Anyway, apart from that, I've seen the highlights of all the rest of the games, and I watched a full 90 of United-Liverpool.
Yeah, okay. Schwinn, what do you watch, mate?
Yeah, I watched the shambles at Anfield, which was not worth it for me to wake up at 7:30. So I'm just going to gloss over that. But can we just talk about how absolutely mesmerizing Manchester City was and have been? Kevin De Bruyne is by far, at this point, in today's moment, the best player in the league. This man was... he has a vision of the field like Neo does in The Matrix. He can play the pass that is required, the weight on the pass, the flight on the pass, one pass to remove five defenders completely from the game. He was running the show. The City fans were jubilant. They were having the time of their life. I'm not happy to see sharks, inflatable sharks at the Etihad. That is a scary sight. I don't want that to become a real thing, but it really is. But I think Pep Guardiola has found his rhythm. He's found the players he wants. Even players like Fabian Delph, who you would consider to be on the out list, have found their way into the squad in some weird mold, playing a left back in defense, making that position like a left center mid in attack. The tactics are confusing. They work. And with players like Kevin De Bruyne and David Silva, Gabriel Jesus, Leroy Sané, Bernardo Silva off the bench, Aguero, who of course didn't feature yesterday, they are a real menace, and they're going to do some special things this season. And I enjoy watching them. I don't like Manchester City because of what they do to us in terms of competition, but I enjoy watching them. And
it's entertaining.
Many people. Yeah, it's great football. It's quick. It's effective, and it's good.
Well, he's always wanted to play, and you only got to look at the teams that he's managed. He plays an entertaining brand of he wants his teams to play an entertaining brand of football. Did you see that De Bruyne pass? I think it was to
Leroy Sané.
Yeah, what a pass! I rewinded on a platter. It. I watched it a couple of times. I was like, how did he even get that ball through?
Even the first goal, when he set Leroy Sané free, and I think then Sané passed to Sterling, I mean, De Bruyne is not going to get any credentials for that in terms of statistics, but just give the man that goal, because without that pass, you're nowhere close to the face of the goal. His pass from the wing in stride, he made a cross in right into the box. I think it was Jesus who finished with his left. What a finish, by the way. And of course, this pass, which was to Sané, which was I don't know how you do that on the field. How do you even see that, let alone execute it? Mind blowing stuff. Perhaps the best individual performance of this season.
Yeah, and then he gets a goal, a cracking goal too, wasn't it?
Did he get a goal?
No, he didn't get a goal. I think that cracking goal was Fernandinho.
Oh, okay, it wasn't him. I thought it was. Savvy, what did you see, mate?
Yeah, I saw the Liverpool game where Mourinho parked the bus as usual.
Yeah.
Then I saw the City game. I think it was a great game. And Pep Guardiola, after all, he's made his team, and now he's showing everybody what he can do. I think he's doing a great job. Then I watched the French League game. Monaco, I think it was Olympic Lyon versus Monaco.
Yeah.
I watched it for Lema, and actually the best player on the pitch was Fakir. I think he's best friends with Alexandre Lacazette, and I think he was unplayable on the day. He was brilliant on that day. I think he stole that game right at the death, and with a free kick, brilliantly executed, and it was a great game. And Then I think Tony's mentioning the game, the Brighton and Everton game was moved to India because Premier League is in India this weekend, and it was a two-day event. So obviously today's game, they had to shift it because it is a 6-hour event in Bengaluru, and they didn't have any game to play.
Premier League weekend?
Yeah, it's Premier League weekend in India, Bengaluru.
Wow, there you go.
So that's why they shifted it, because they didn't have any game to play, and it was a 6-hour event. So they had to shift it. And as Tony said, I think Wayne Rooney scored a penalty at the death and threw it. So I think it's we should take advantage of Everton's poor form next week, probably.
Jeez, nobody can say the Premier League's not a world game, eh? You're moving time slots for India. And no disrespect, Savvy, but I think that's brilliant. Like,
yeah, I think many around 20,000 fans are there. Mm. Even I wanted to go, but I couldn't go because of my college. But I think it was a very successful event. Very, very successful.
Yeah, well. I was, because over here, when we get all, there's a couple of games come on at midnight, so you type of get them all on there, and we get a pick to which one we want. So I started watching Manchester City, and then I was looking at Chelsea Crystal Palace, because I had a bet on Chelsea. Yeah. They're only $1.30 or something, but I had them in my multi, and I thought, I need these bastards to win, and I got a notification, Crystal Palace scored, and I thought, what the fuck? Crystal Palace scored?
and they were way better than Chelsea.
And so I ended up flicking it over and watching Crystal Palace and Chelsea, and yeah, Chelsea, I do not feel sorry for you lads at all. I think Crystal Palace played you off the park. They scored their first two goals of the Premier League season against you, who call yourselves the champions. Happy days.
And I think they missed 8-9 clear-cut chances.
Yeah.
They could have had many more.
So I ended up watching a bit of that, and then obviously the Arsenal-Watford game, so which was 3:30 a.m. for us, which was a killer. So, anyway.
Another fun game over the weekend. Sorry, I'm cutting you off, Ted.
Yeah, mate.
Another fun game over the weekend was Dortmund versus Leipzig. I caught the tail end of that game. And some fantastic attacking football. Each team was down to 10 men, so that always opens up the pitch. A couple of late goals. I think Leipzig ended up winning 3-2, but that was another frantic game. And the Signal Iduna is always a buzz, so that's always a pleasure to watch.
I will, because I've got a lot of friends who follow the Serie A, I've got to have a shout out. The fat ladies.
Yeah, I think Napoli.
It was the old ladies getting beat by Lazio, and I couldn't be more happy. As a Roma fan as well, I was like, yeah, you beauty. So shout out to the Juventus fans. Good on yous, lads. righto. So I want to, before we wrap things up, I just want to quickly talk about the internationals. Chile's out of the internationals, Sanchez no World Cup, and America, and since we have our American friend on with us today, I thought we'll discuss what has actually become of America out of the, what does it mean for Americans, have you fellas, with no World Cup?
It's a slap in the face, to put it mildly. There's a lot of money in this country in general. And there's a lot of money in this country that is put in football, in soccer, as they like to call it here. The MLS is one of the more advertised and more corporately successful leagues. It brings in a lot of money. But I don't know if you guys are aware, there's no promotion relegation system. The incentive to do well doesn't really work the same way it works in England or in Europe. But there's a broader disconnect that people are sort of, you know, diving into and analyzing deeper. And of course, we can get into that if you guys would like to. But in a very brief way to just encapsulate what's going on, there is a major disconnect between the major soccer football bodies in this country, whether it's the U.S. Soccer Federation, whether it's the MLS, whether it's the NASL. And any other body of football that either works with football or administers football, there's a major disconnect. A lot of talent is seeping through because the U.S. soccer is famous for being a pay-to-play system where only a few portion, like a small portion of the population can afford to educate their kids in soccer. It's not that accessible, which is so weird because soccer is the blue-collar sport of the world. All you need is a half-inflatable ball and two pairs of shoes to make to fashion a goalpost. So it's really ironic that's what it is, especially in this country, which has all the money you can require to implement your policies. But there is a major disconnect, and of course we can dive deeper, but we really need to capitalize on the talent, because the talent here exists, but it's getting diverted to different sports.
Yeah, interesting. So, because I read an article, you spent, the American government spent quite a bit of money on the American football team, and which surprised me, because NFL's your biggest sport there?
That's a good question. I would say the national pastime, there's no national sport of this country, but the national pastime of this country is baseball.
Okay.
In terms of popularity, I would argue the NBA is getting more popular than the NFL because of all the controversy that has surrounded the NFL recently with the national anthem and whatnot.
Yep.
But I would say in terms of value, the NBA probably is close to the top, if not already surpassing the NFL.
Right, okay. And is there rumors or the ideas of what America's the government spent on the football over there in the international team?
I'm not sure about that, and in fact, I might be wrong, and I would hope someone would clear me on this, but I don't think the American government is involved.
Okay,
The U.S. doesn't have a ministry of sport. Everything is privately financed. The U.S. Olympic teams are completely privately financed. The government does not provide direct support. They might, they might volunteer in an Olympic year, but not regularly. They're not funded by the government.
Yeah, okay.
No, so that's the whole different thing.
Okay, no, very interesting, because, it's always interesting to see what goes on around the other places, but it was a bit of a shock. Trinidad Tobago beat us 2-1, and that basically took us out, didn't it? So
it did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and being an Australian fan, don't worry, mate. We've got our own problems too, but it's quite good watching you fellas are already out of it. But we've got, we've got our own problems. I'm not even going to go into it. So, okay, Tony, Chile also they're another team who are out of the World Cup, which has shocked many. Yeah. What's that do for Sanchez's confidence?
I don't know. It's, of course, he'll want to be there. Every player wants to be there. But it's not like... Look, it's a characteristic of Sanchez. Like, we didn't make top four and he's sulking about it. He was a big part of that team. He was probably the main part of that team. Mm. Chile didn't make the World Cup. Again, he was a big part. Probably him and Arturo Vidal were the key players in that team.
Yeah.
So what it does for his confidence, I don't know, because yes, he's one of the better players, but if you're meant to carry the team, not just sulk because everyone isn't as good as you. Like, if Messi sulked because everyone wasn't as good as him, he retired when he was 21. Mm. He's never played since he's been 20. He's never played with a player that's better than him. The same could be said for Ronaldo. The same could be said for any great player. If you're a great player, the chances are the people around you are going to be worse. Mm. That's the whole point of being great. So, I think the bloke's a bit of a dick from how it comes across. I don't really care about his confidences. You don't want to be at Arsenal. He's not got anything to do next summer, so it makes his move to City a bit easier for him. I don't really care. It is interesting that I'm not sure how it finished, but I know at one stage, if they only lost by one goal, they still would have gone through on goal difference. Obviously, it ended up 3-0, but the second goal came from Sanchez overplaying and losing the ball, and then Brazil scored on the counter-attack. I mean, I feel like I've seen that a million times before, but not Arsenal fans or even some Arsenal fans would tell you that never happens, just because he's a good player. Apparently, he never makes a mistake. I've got no real sympathy for him. He's a big part of that team. I don't think Chileans would be crying if Harry Kane didn't make a World Cup or if Messi didn't make a World Cup, or if Neymar didn't make a World Cup, or if Suarez didn't make a World Cup. So, to be honest, I don't really care. I mean, as an England fan, we've got no chance of winning it, but you got more chance of getting through your group or getting further in the tournament without a team like Chile there. So, to be honest, I don't care about this. As an England fan, I don't care about the spectacle. Mm. I'd rather have a World Cup with everyone being crap, because then we've got a chance of winning it. We'd still lose it.
Well, I got no chance, mate. I'm an Aussie. What chance have we got? Timmy Cahill.
Yeah, I was thinking, I'll let you know what the World Cup's like when you three will probably be, actually Australia could still get through.
We can still get through. Honduras, I think we've got to beat, which is...
Isn't it? Oh, yeah, Panama got through, yeah.
So yeah, Panama got through, so... look, I agree with you, and if we don't get through, boys, I'm going to go for Iceland. I'm going to do the Viking clap thing.
As our American representative, can we somehow convince you that Christian Pulisic is English and have him, please?
he's a really good player. I love Pulisic, and I asked the same question to you guys, whether we can send him off to Germany some way. I feel for the kid. I think he's got a lot of quality, and I know we wouldn't touch on transfers, but I actually wouldn't mind him at Arsenal. Despite his American connection, I think he's got a lot of quality and he shows a lot of promise. And to see him just trot after the match, it was heartbreaking.
Okay. I'm going to touch on this, guys, and we're giving you plenty of content tonight, so today, wherever you're listening around the world. And thank you for sticking around, but I just want to touch quickly, and it's just an article that grabbed my attention. Exclusive, Arsenal squad left feeling sick after thousands spent on new training technology. And basically they're talking about Arsenal paid £100,000 to boost the performance of their players in virtual reality. But the state-of-the-art system they installed at the start of the season has not been a total hit, with the several first-team players complaining that gave them motion sickness. Tony, you've done a little... like me, mate, we just caught the story, just before we did the podcast, started this podcast. So what's your take on it, mate, the virtual reality?
I don't know if any of you have used VR for gaming or whatever, and it can cause motion sickness. I actually... randomly, I'd done before it came out, I'd done like a product research on it to see how it would feel, and I was okay with it. But the premise of it at Arsenal is that they claim, and it's a claim, I don't really believe it, that they can recreate any match situation. Mm. So if you can be put in the same situation again with the same surroundings, it can increase your decision making. You'll make better decisions because it's like you've been in that situation before, and also your reaction time will improve because, it's like pulling off in a car. The first time you do it is going to be slower than the thousandth time you've done it. Mm. So because the theory is that because they've done that, they've been in similar situations many times before, their reaction time will be shorter, meaning they can get the pass off quicker or they can get the shot off quicker or make the right decision quicker. I don't know if it's a gimmick. They reckon Arsenal spent £100,000 on it, which sounds like a lot to us, but in reality, it's not, and it's probably worth that for the club to try. It's not going to make you worse.
Yep.
It may make you a bit better, and if it does, £100,000 is a small price to pay. It's not mandatory. It's not like they're saying, instead of training today, we're going to go in the VR room.
Yeah.
So, as I said, it's something there to try it. If certain players don't like it, they won't use it. If other players do like it, they will.
Oh, yeah.
As I said, speculative for £100,000, it's not the worst thing to happen. There's no surprise the stories came out after we've lost. If we had gone on 1-5-0, no one would say it's because of VR. It's a bit of a non-story, and it's just something the club are trying. As I said, £100,000 to these guys, it is nothing. Like, most of them pay more than that in tax a week, the players.
Mm.
And obviously, if I look at the club as a business, I don't know what they turn over, but it's in the hundreds of millions. So they've spent less than 0.1% of their earnings on this. Mm. It's not a big thing.
Not a big thing, not a big investment. Savvy, what's your... You know much about VR technology?
Yeah, I've used it on the PlayStation a little bit. And definitely it causes some strain and motion sickness.
Mm.
But yeah, if Arsenal are looking to use it, or if they have used it, if there's any truth to this story, then definitely they would have researched it, and they would have found something which could make our players better. Mm. That's why they decided to use it. So obviously, I think it can improve your reaction time, as Tony mentioned.
Mm.
And if it works out, I think it would only be good for us. And it's not very expensive. And VAR is, I think, it's very well known now. And even I think players will be using it for the gaming and all purposes, because it's a new trend. And so I think if it works out, it's good investment for the club. And rest, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, well, it's under the headline Watford 2, Arsenal 1, and it says Schwinn, and they talk about the company claims that the youth players at Ajax improved their decision making by 20%. Well, we could have won that game if we were using this. Okay. We got a Europa League game during the week, haven't we? Before our next podcast.
Yeah.
Do you want?
That's right, Red Star.
Yeah. Do you want to quickly touch on that, boys? Quick prediction, quick lineup.
Yeah.
Okay, go Savvy. Quick lineup prediction. Quick prediction.
Yeah.
Of the score.
Yeah, I would go for Ospina in goal. I think Wenger will be sticking with that for this formation only. Chambers at the back, if he's back. Mertesacker holding, then Nelson, Niles, Wilshere, and I want Coquelin in the middle. Then Theo, Giroud, and probably Alexis Sanchez up front.
Prediction?
And prediction. I think we can win this comfortably. 2-0 to Arsenal.
2-0. Schwinn?
Yeah. I think I'm with Savvy on the lineup. Maybe a change or two. Nothing that I anticipate, but I think it's going to be similar to that. I do suspect Elneny to start over Coquelin. Just because, as Tony said, if he starts the Europa League game, that would mean that he might not feature in the Premier League game. Excuse me. So that might be something to watch out for. It will be a tough game, though. Belgrade and the atmosphere there is going to be a little daunting. We've seen what a daunting atmosphere, even at home when Cologne visited, can do to us in certain scenarios. So it will be a daunting game. The fans are going to turn up to, you know, watch an exciting game. I do envision us walking away with the win. So let's hope that we are able to secure a 1-0, maybe a 2-1 win, and come back to London happy.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah. I mean, the lineup, I think it semi picks himself. I mean, the players will get a run out. It'll be, so I'd say Ospina, it'll be Nelson at right wing back. Mertesacker holding. It'll be interesting to see if he drafts a young player in as the third centre back, or if Monreal is forced to travel. Maitland-Niles will play left wing back. I think Coquelin will play. I know what I said about Elneny earlier, but I think Coquelin will play because he's not had any minutes. He's been out for a while, so it's an ideal chance to get him some game time in a game that, frankly, the club don't particularly care about. So I think it could be him and Elneny. I mean, I would hope that it would be him and Elneny with Jack playing further forward. And because I don't think Sanchez will travel, because he will be in our squad on Sunday if he's mentally right. And if he isn't mentally right, then he won't travel to Belgrade anyway. So I would hope it would be Elneny, Coquelin, Theo on the right, Jack on the left, the same position he played against Barthez away, and then Oli up top. Predictions, to be honest, I know next to nothing about Red Star. They're going all right in the group. We're top there second. So, I mean, as I said, look, the group's not the most important thing to us now. If we win our two home games, we won the group. Two other home games, we won the group. So, I mean, we'll obviously be looking to win. As Schwimm touched on it's going to be hostile. It's going to be a tough place to play. Just no injuries. I don't particularly. Obviously, I always want to win. We don't want to be showing up, but it's difficult to. Well, actually, it's not difficult to do a prediction. 10-0.
Okay, and just to give you some quick odds, Arsenal are a favourite, obviously at $1.73. Red Star at $4.50, and that's with Bet365 in Australia. So I don't know what they convert to your countries, but you work it out. basically, we're favourites, but we're not a short favourite. Like $4.50, then they're not offering big odds, really. So now, just some other things I was looking at, as Tony said, because I read Star, I don't know a lot about either. They've just lost, Red Star have lost just once in their last 11 games in Europa competition, including qualifiers. Righto, so it's going to be a tough game, but a game I think we can get up. I'm like you guys, I hope Elneny starts, because that means he doesn't start in the Premier League. I'm going to say a 2-1 win Arsenal. So. Okay, guys, look, thanks for sticking with us today or tonight, wherever you're listening to around the world, because we've given you an hour and a half of content. Thank you, Savvy, and thank you, Schwinn.
Thanks for having me.